the Million Dollar Mortgage Experience Podcast.
All right, welcome to today's podcast. I'm here with Juan Munoz. He's a realtor and a mortgage broker at First Choice Home Team. Juan is bilingual and used to work in private banking world. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, I like the setup.
Thanks.
It's pretty awesome.
Glad to have you on. So let's talk about your story. And I know you do both. So you do loans and you do real estate. So tell me how you got to that point.
Yeah, I'm not arrogant enough to call myself a Tawny, but that's the only kind of comparison that I can make in the sports world, right? Somebody who does both in a, I guess, in a field where a lot of times realtors and both lenders try to stay in their lanes. I'm kind of a hybrid, and that gives clients a little bit of an advantage. But if I'm taking a couple steps back, I started out in private banking, started off with Wells, was a teller there for a while, and really it was just a part-time gig while I'm going to school. That ended up becoming like, hey, you're kind of good at talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 6 months, they were like, hey, you want to become a banker? And then people started talking to me about like, and I'm like 19, right? People started talking to me about, you know, what's your career path? What do you want to do? What do you like? And I had a cousin, still have a cousin that's a financial advisor. And he was like, hey, man, come into the investment world. We love it over here. I think you'd be great at it. And so eventually I started studying for my 7-series licensing and then ended up getting that. Got into private banking and then started knowing all the nuances of like credit, mortgage lending, investments. Pretty much when a client comes into me, it's like I'm kind of like a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And then I see which partner I can kind of get involved that that's their specialty and they specialize in. And then it kind of just went from there. And then eventually I started to realize like, okay, people move significantly slower when a market is high. Mm-hmm. So like before 2020, right? Market is roaring, super strong. Nobody wants to touch their investments. And I'm kind of in a situation where it's pulling teeth to get even like, hey, I want to review your brokerage stuff like from Merrill.
Yep.
Bring me some statements and clients be like, ah,
I'm good. Yeah.
Then I started noticing like, but whenever I asked for any sort of documentation from my mortgage partner, within 24 hours, they had it. So I'm like, okay, there's something here.
Yeah.
And there's something tangible to people's houses. People are very emotionally involved. And when you ask them for a document, even now, it's like 24-hour turnaround time, super quick. If they don't get it to you in that time, it's like they apologize, right? Like they're doing you a disservice. And I don't know, I just kind of saw that light. Eventually ended up talking to my boss, my broker owner, and he was like, yeah, come to our side. Let me kind of school you on how it works and how it is. And then been doing it ever since.
You got sucked in.
Eventually. I didn't want to say the dark side, but like, yeah.
I mean, you know, we're mortgage brokers and in the mortgage business, it's a curse and
yeah.
A blessing.
Yeah. Oh man, it's hyper competitive.
It's like really hard to leave it.
Yeah. It's hyper competitive and everything like that, but it's fun. I like it.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of the reason why it's hard to leave is because it's not just the money, and the money is a lot of it's up and down, but there's so much it's rewarding, right? Like when you put someone in a house or you save the money, you help get them cash out for whatever, a pool for their family or, you know, whatever it is, start a new business. So it's a fun business, you know?
It's very involved.
It's definitely a roller coaster though.
Oh yeah. I mean, I, on the way over here, I read some crazy statistic that it's like of NMLS renewals, right?
Yep.
Like 70% drop off from 2020 to now. So it's like, okay, the people that are still in the industry are priming themselves for like a pretty big comeback once rates do hover a little bit lower and things of that nature. The guys that left, it's like they're back to, I don't know, whatever they were doing before.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. So talk about like your market right now. You're where you're at in the like geographically and what you're seeing as far as like new buyers come to market. Are they starting to come out of the woodwork now that the rates are starting to get a little bit better? Like, what are you seeing out there?
Yeah, significantly. So when I was, before I left private banking, I was up in Carlsbad. So without saying which place that I left, because I don't think I'm big enough to get a cease and desist or anything, right? But What I ended up doing was pulling basically my top 50 clients and letting them know what I was doing. And once I left the company, a lot of them were my first clients, right?
Yep.
And so they entrusted me with big transactions and things of that nature. So my client base is mainly up in like North County, but I mean, I cover all of San Diego. So like I have a showing after this in Encanto. So I'm like worried, like, is it like in a bad flood zone or whatever the case is? And that's what we're starting to hear more. Mm. It's like, because of these recent weather events, more people are coming up to us and saying like, am I in a flood zone?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's understandable, but you know, no, you're not. We're good.
You're fine.
We're solid. As far as the other question, yeah, we're seeing as soon as rates dip down a little bit, the floodgates started opening up, right? So when we went from 7 to 6, it was like people starting to come back saying like, hey, I want to come back in. But then at that time, it's like, okay, well, everybody's coming back in and now you're competing for higher purchase prices. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot more competition. So
yep.
Those are the buyers that we're seeing. I'm seeing a lot of first-time home buyers and I'm starting to see more self-employed borrowers, where that's kind of where I love the non-QM space, right?
Yep.
Gives my clients an option to not pay the government more in taxable income, but also get their stuff.
Right.
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 So
I always used to get these crazy questions from borrowers, and they would, these questions were like surrounded, like, should I file higher tax returns just so I can get a better rate? You know? And it's like, you know, and then you can do the math for them, and it clearly is better if they pay less taxes and they have a little higher rate.
Yeah.
Know? So, I mean, I guess over 30 years you might question that, but at the end of the day, you know, you can refinance and lower the rate. But a lot of people think that, like, oh man, I have to have this super low rate, you know, and I'll pay all this money to the IRS. And you're like, it's much better to not.
Yep. I mean, realistically speaking, what's the likelihood of them keeping this loan all throughout?
Yeah.
And then I have clients that are locked in at 2, 3, sometimes even 4, and they're holding on to this rate. And I'm like, hey, your family's outgrowing this property. Like, mm-hmm. are you kind of holding on to the knife by the knife side, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to hold on to this rate, but the house is really not the best fit anymore.
Yep.
And we're starting to see a lot of that and a lot more movement, even just touching base with past clients. It's like,
yep.
Life changes. You know, we think in our head that, like, oh, they're good, they're fine, but could be, you know, something happened.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that, like, the statistic is something like people refinance every 3 to 5 years. People move sometimes between 7 and 10 years. So it's like, you know, I mean, I guess there's those people that just never move, right?
Yeah.
They stay in their house forever.
My parents.
Yeah. And I think at certain age, you kind of get to that point. But then, yeah, like your parents probably, I mean, maybe they outgrew the house or like they don't need that much space anymore and they want a little easier. If it's a 2-story, you want a 1-story, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think everyone kind of has still, if the market's right and balanced, then everyone can kind of like move when they need to and to change things up.
100%. I mean, I think that this year, too, is going to see a ton of movement.
Yeah.
People are going to start to see rates steadily decline, and that's where I'm able to talk openly on both sides, right? Because I have the proper licensing and things like that. I don't just tell my clients, hey, date the rate and hope for the best.
Yeah.
I was told by a good mentor of mine. He basically told me, in your industry specifically, he's not even in real estate. He's just a wealthy, successful guy that I consider a privilege to be, you know, a mentor of mine. It's like, in your industry, you always want to deal in worst case scenarios and case studies. And that just like is tattooed into my brain. So
explain more of that.
So for example, if I was to tell, let's just say like the average realtor that is in this, you know, date the rate, marry the house kind of mentality. Great. Let's say your client is dating the rate at 8%. But they're, you know, they're at their wit's end at 8% and they're struggling. Now there's maybe a job loss or something that's unanticipated, an accident, and they can't work full time. They have to work part time. At that point, what happens? Right.
Yeah.
So that's where like the worst case scenario comes in. So always think of those worst case scenarios. Yeah. And that's whenever I tell clients, even now, hey, 6%, are you comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
7%, are you comfortable? What about 8%? Are you comfortable? And as long as they give me the go-ahead, yes, this is cool, I'm comfortable, mm-hmm. perfect.
Yeah.
Case studies is more so just like, here's what I've done to get from point A to point B, and here's the results, and here's how I did this, how I achieved this, you know. More so it's like whenever you're doing like a listing or something like that, like let's say you were to sell your property, right? And I come up to you and I say, hey, John, well, here's how what we did. We held, you know, 5 open houses. We had 100 people come in. We had 20 offers, and we sold the property 50K over ask in 21 days. Yep. And that's my case study now for the next potential like listing, right?
Mm-hmm. So. For sure. So you talked a little about non-QM. What are your favorite parts of that?
I'd say the bank statement programs, man. When I'm able to talk to like self-employed borrowers, the biggest thing that I hear all the time is like, do I have to, like, do I have to pay more in taxes? Like you were mentioning earlier, yeah. right?
Right.
And it's like, well, I'm not a tax advisor, right? I'm not a CPA. I'm not an accountant. I don't have any of those licenses. But I would say that the entire goal of a tax advisor, consultant, person, CPA is to lower your taxable income.
Right.
Why would you try to increase it to get into a house? When I explain it like yeah. that, they're just like, okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. What can we do? The first thing people think of is like hard money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you can do that if you want to pay like a crazy VIG, you know, this is like Joe Pesci kind of stuff, right? Like, and so they always kind of ask like, well, what's out there for me? Great. Give me your bank statements. I'll get them reviewed. And even just getting that across, right? Bank statements are very personal.
Yeah.
Especially for a business owner. Somebody's now analyzing and critiquing your...
Yeah, what you spend your money on and where you're... Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So being able to have that trust as soon as they send them over and I get them analyzed, it's like, oh, there's an option. I can actually do that. I don't have to pay more in taxes. This is amazing.
Right. And
I haven't really gotten much blowback as far as like, rates. I've gotten like one guy that was like, hey, well, my neighbor has, you know, 6% locked in.
Right.
I'm like, great. What's your neighbor's cholesterol levels?
Yeah. What's your neighbor's income? What's their job? Yeah. Totally different deal.
It's so hard to compare them because then it's like, these are two different scenarios. You guys aren't in the same boat.
Yeah.
But I have a way to get you from point A to point B and get you into the house that you want at the price point that we want and it has all the tangibles. This is the path.
That's good. What do you like better, doing real estate or mortgages? Is there a difference that you, something that stands out more?
They each have their positives and their negatives. I guess if I was being selfish, I would prefer to do loans. Dude, I could do those in my PJs all day long, right? Yeah. Don't have to travel, don't have to deal with rain, don't have to deal with showings or scheduling or lockboxes or anything like that. But there's something about like the tangibles, like showing a house that is really cool. I'd say loan officer, I have a little bit of an edge, you know, so a little bit of a preference to be a loan officer. But it's really only because it's like you can do it from anywhere. Yeah. Right. And I can advise people from anywhere and there's no physical commitment. At the same time, though, like seeing somebody when they walk into a house and it's like they know that it's it. It's a weird feeling.
It's cool.
But yeah. It's really cool.
That's cool. So you thinking this year is going to be pretty good?
I'd say so, at least for the guys that are left. Right. The guys and girls that are left, that they're still crushing it. They're still doing it. But what's so weird is like even recently, I've had calls with listing agents or people that I'm trying to get a hold of, right? And I can't get a hold of them or I can't get a call back. And I'm like, is it me? Am I showing up as like a scam call? Like what's going on here? Because, you know, are you trying to sell this house? And I've talked to other agents and they've told me the same thing. Like people have listings and then they don't answer their phone. I'm like, how does that work?
I don't know. I think overall, people just don't like to answer their phones anymore. Unless you're a salesperson, right? If you're a salesperson, you're answering your phone always, which is interesting because listing agents or salespeople, so they should be constantly answering their phone. But I think it, just the trend of people just not, you know, after post COVID, like so many things changed, right? Like I think as a whole, you know, not completely, you know, everyone, but a lot more people are a lot more chill. Like there's less hustle. So if you have hustle right now, you have an advantage. You could actually crush it because there's a lot of people that are just like, to your point, not answering their phone. They're not working as hard. You know, they're just sort of cruising. So I don't know what that is. I mean, I have my theories, but
yeah,
I think right now, if you double down and you hustle, you can crush it, especially in 24. And also to your point of like, there's less people in the industry. A lot of people left. So if you just, you know, if you get ready for, you know, scale your business, get everything ducks in a row, that you're just going to have a monster year in 24.
Let me pick your brain on something, actually. What do you think, how do you think automation factors into all this stuff?
You know, automation is sort of a double-edged sword because I'm a big believer in client relationships and really getting deeper on relationships and getting repeat business and, you know, making referrals and things like that. And what happens with technology, you could use software to really scale a mortgage business where you like send links out and they do the application on their own and you're not involved in that. But like, that is where you build rapport, is on a 1003.
Yep.
If you're taking that loan app, you're talking to them about their kids, their dependents, you're talking about their first house, their real estate, you're talking about their job, all these things that when you ask someone questions, it actually, there's a trigger that happens in their brain that makes them want to like you. You know what I mean? Like, if you've been around people where they never ask a question back and you ask them questions, but they're never reciprocating that and they never ask you a question, you leave that transaction kind of like, that guy was a kind of a prick or whatever,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, he didn't care at all about
it. Or one-word answers or right. Something like that, yeah.
But if you're talking to someone and they are really interested in you, really asking you questions, then you leave that transaction or that moment, you leave that time with a really positive imprint about that person.
Yeah.
So I think you're missing out so much on a really big relationship building opportunity when you don't do the 1003.
Right.
Over the phone or in person. Person would be the best, but that's super hard to scale. You can't really be there. Over the phone for sure. Zoom would be better because you're face to face. You can read their reactions. So I'm a believer that like, scale with maybe more employees or more like an assistant technology. There's other probably technologies that I'm not thinking of right now, but there's stuff out there that could help for sure. Like certain other softwares, automated email, you know, updates, things like that. But I'm old school, man. I think you should get back to, you know, taking a phone, 1003 over a Zoom or a phone, and just really deepening that rapport with the client.
I kind of like that though, because then it sounds like it's like, okay, partial automation, right? Stuff that's like maybe like a follow up or like a report,
well,
or
if you can keep them updated to where they're not having to wonder like what's going on with the loan.
Yep.
Then that right there is a huge, because you can really save a client's from being upset.
Oh yeah.
By just keeping them in the loop, even if it's nothing. Like, hey, just want to give you a quick update. Got your appraisal back. Back in underwriting, you know, whatever, like, you know, we're moving forward, still on track. But like, if that was automated and they thought it was you actually reaching out to them, that's golden, because that helps you not have to worry about that. So
what's interesting is I've called clients recently and, you know, shame on me, but hadn't talked to them in like maybe 6 months, 8 months, a year, something like that. Called them, and the first thing they did was when they picked up two or three rings, they were like, hey, Juan. I'm like, oh man, it's a great feeling when somebody says like, you know, that your contact saved in there and they answer your phone call almost immediately. Right.
Right.
Or they call you back same day kind of thing. Like, hey, like what's going on? How's everything going? And that just kind of really shows the type or the level of rapport. And those are really the clients that I want in my book of business. Right. People that are like, they see me as the advisor role.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? More so than just like, well, it's a realtor or a lender. It's really hard to maintain that, because like, eventually there's like the cousin, the sister, somebody that gets their real estate license, right? And it's like, man, if I didn't add enough value for you to just say like they're a month in and they're getting business over me, then I didn't do my job, you know? So,
what would you say is like a good tip for, you know, if you were trying to teach somebody on how to originate, like where to find the loans, like especially like self-employed borrowers and things like that? Do you go out and do like networking events?
Where to find clients?
Yeah. Where do you find?
The easiest fish is in your own backyard. I mean, it's like you have people within your sphere, right? So you have social media.
Yep.
Huge. Mm-hmm. Hit up your networks. Hit up people that already know and like you, right? And sometimes people get like shy with that stuff. Like, man, I've had the same best friends and my fiance makes fun of me because she's like, you guys are an anomaly. We're always at each other's weddings, involved with each other's kids. I'm the god, you know, dad for multiple kids now at this point and vice versa and things like that, right?
It's cool.
But those were the first guys that I reached out to when I got a new origination. Hey, how's it going? You know you guys locked in an amazing rate.
Right.
How can I help? And just offering yourself more so as like a resource than anything. And most of the time, it's like you're having this conversation and then it's like the... Now the Ford method, right? So you have any family, anybody in your job, anybody that you hang out with in the basketball league, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's most of the time people that like, oh yeah, this person's thinking about buying a house. Let me connect you. But not even going that far. It's like, let me give them your information. I'm like, no. If you're cool with it, can I have their information? Then I'll reach out.
Yeah.
There's already that level of trust built, right? Like, hey, my buddy John told me to reach out to you, heard you're thinking about buying a house, what's going on? So automatically in their brain, they're thinking like, oh, I know John, he's great, he's awesome. This guy knows him obviously too.
Totally.
So, okay, cool, yeah, I'm looking in Orange County, here's kind of what I'm looking for, and then it just kind of goes from there, right?
Yep.
And then I can go in and over the phone do a 1003, right?
Yep.
W-2, are you employed? Are you self-employed? What's your business? Being genuine, man, like,
yeah,
there's some really interesting people that own some really interesting businesses.
Yeah, I just met someone yesterday that owns a cookie business. Like,
crushing.
I thought you might be big, like a fatter person because, like, if you own a cookie business, it's like, you know, you got to taste your cookies. And,
yeah.
But like, you know, I was like, that's different. You know,
was it the owner of Crumble? Because then I got to get an in, man.
I don't remember the name of it, but yeah, cookie business. So. Yeah, there's all kinds of businesses, right? Like stuff you would never even think about.
Tequila business.
Shout out to We Drink Tequila. but yeah, like all kinds of stuff. I mean, I'm in an entrepreneur group that has all, you know, anyone who's a business owner. But you have to have a certain level of income or a certain level of revenue for the business. But there's all kinds of stuff, man. Like you said, just so many different businesses.
It's interesting, cool. though, because like you think about the barrier of entry, right? For something like that, the barrier of entry is really high. Yep. So I have, again, going back to like a mentor, I have a mentor that he kind of told me, hey, when you're starting out, you know, hustle,
mm-hmm.
crush it. Like eventually when you get into a point in time, he's like, buy yourself a nice watch. Buy yourself a nice, like, if you can, a nice high-end car. And I thought of it and I'm like, well, I never thought of a watch as an appreciating asset or a car.
It is for right? sure.
It is for sure. Yeah.
Cars aren't not really, but I mean.
But the way he broke it down for me was he was like, you know, I have a Ferrari mm-hmm. and that Ferrari has gotten me more business because even though I'm like, maybe I'm barely getting that Ferrari and I'm barely able to afford it. Doesn't really matter because those guys don't necessarily know that. And even if I'm at the bottom of the totem pole in these like scope of these businesses, these business owners, I want to be there.
Yeah,
because I'm just going to learn so much from these guys. If I didn't have that Ferrari or that key, as he put it,
mm-hmm.
then I would have never been able to interact with them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, that's kind of a cool thought process, right?
Yeah. I think it's like joining a golf club, you know, same kind of thing.
Or like an expensive gym or something like that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you are who you're around, right? And mm-hmm. so
law you're proximity. Hanging
around with people who are winners, then you tend to win more.
Especially because, I mean, you'll attest to this in this entrepreneur group. Those guys want to see you win.
Yeah.
they want to see you continue to crush it and do more businesses and eventually partner up with some stuff. Or if their opportunity presents itself properly, potentially partner up with their business, you know?
Yeah, it's true. There's no like jealousy, you know, it's like you guys, you're not competing, but you're all in the cut from the same cloth. You know, you're entrepreneurs. It's a great, I love being a part of that. It's been cool.
What are your thoughts on investing on like into masterminds, or is there something that somebody should be like going into? Events, masterminds, networking, things like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's never good to be stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
You want to always be growing, always be learning, always be becoming better, right? Like if you are on a mission to be great and never are like just content with where you are, then you're always going to grow, you know, whatever it is. And problem is, like, as we get older, we tend to get worse, right? Like your memory starts to fade, your looks start to fade, you get older, right? It's like, you just, things are getting worse. So you got to almost be counterbalancing that with bettering yourself, right?
Except Jennifer Aniston. I don't know what she's doing, but Tom Cruise too, man. Like,
those guys are pretty, yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
Brad Pitt, he's like 60 now. And I'm like, I still picture him in like Troy or Legends of the Fall or something like that. And yeah. I'm like, man, how's this guy 60? What's going on here?
Yeah, some of them are looking real old though. Like Mel Gibson, man. He's.
I think it's the beard.
Yeah, well, yeah. No. That white beard he's got. But, you know, yeah, it's funny when you see a celebrity like you haven't seen in a long time and you like see a picture and you're like, what? But yeah, I mean, I think you're always got to get better. You always got to work at, you know, whether you're learning a new language or whether it's, you know, getting better at your craft, becoming a better loan officer, you know, learning about income better, learning about, you know, how to, because then like you become the expert in that particular field, right? And then people want to go to you and you have more confidence and people can feel that confidence when they're talking to you. It's a good thing.
I think that's one of the biggest things. And that's why I like working with Shane, because he goes and he's like, hey man, if I don't know the answer, I'm going to find it out for you. And he researches it and gets it back to me. But he's also like, dude, ask me questions. Yeah. Like, there's no ego or anything like that. And most of the time we are in a very highly competitive environment where information and egos are high and things like that. Right. So if I ever hesitate or think about hesitating, I'm kind of doing a disservice to my client.
Yeah.
So having a partnership with somebody like that to say like, hey Shane, like, I don't know, what are your thoughts on this? Well, this is the way that I would take. Like, that's invaluable to me, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
knowing where to find the answers is good. It's a good thing.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, I know that he just wants to see me win, you know?
Yep.
So he's like, hey man, like, let's crush it this year. Let's go out and do more stuff. How can I
get some events?
Yeah. How can I get you better at, you know, DSCR or bank statement stuff or whatever questions you might have, you know? So
good. Really good. What other ways do you build client relationships? Are you, like we just talked about, maybe events, you have any other creative ways that you go out and find loans?
Yeah.
I'd say your backyard, but like, do you get CPAs or, you know, I know you're a realtor too and you have probably that network, but what else?
I'd say probably one of my strongest referral bases is actually banking partners. So coming from the banking world, understanding their, I guess their ceilings is a good way to put it, right? So, hey, if you have somebody that is maybe a little bit outside the box, non-cookie cutter, you know, send them over to me. And if I have anybody vice versa that I feel is going to fit into your box, I'll gladly send a client over to you and let's get more stuff going.
Yeah.
And that's really been one of the strongest ones. Also trust attorneys, divorce attorneys. Divorce attorneys is tough because like it's such a negative thing, right? Yeah. But it's one of those things that just happens. Yeah, it's one of those things that just happens. CPAs, fiduciaries. I guess one of the bigger advantages is I can speak their language, right? So I might have a question for them and it's something where I partner up with them on, right? So I met a client the other day that was a referral from another client and they were asking me some questions about like multiple people on title and things like that. Hey, I have a brother on title. And I was like, great. Well, do you have a trust? Why is this not in your trust? Well, I haven't updated it. Great. I have a tr- trust person that I need you to go talk to them so that they can get everything handled. And then, you know, we can kind of figure stuff out from there. But if you don't know how to speak that language, it's going to be very, very hard for you to, you know, talk to trust attorneys. And,
right.
And there's so, it's so nuanced, right? Like probate, estates, conservatorships, guardianships. But having a little bit of knowledge in that space separates you from the pack, you know?
It's cool. Yeah, there's so many ways to get loans. I mean, there's the like you said, the trust attorneys, divorce attorneys, CPAs, realtors, your backyard, going to a football game, you know, anyone, right? Like there's business everywhere you look. And I think so many times we just sort of like get on cruise control in life, and we're not like looking for these opportunities, and so you don't see them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, have you heard that example when someone said, like, you know, look around the room and, you know, tell me, you know, anything that's red, like look for anything that's red in the room. Right. And then you close your eyes and you said, can you tell me that you, anything you saw that was yellow? And no, I can't. I was looking for red. So if you're not looking for that thing, you're not looking for those opportunities, you're not going to find them. They're not going to just fall in your lap. But if you turn on that opportunity, you know, set of sunglasses or, you know, lenses, you can find opportunities everywhere and ways that you can get origination business.
I think another one is volunteering your time. So, one of my clients, she's a school administrator. She's like a counselor kind of thing. And I was like, hey, do you have high school seniors, right? Seniors and juniors and things like that. And I was like, hey, if you have any time slots, I'd love to talk to them about money.
Yeah.
And, she was like, yeah, let me talk to the teachers and blah, blah, blah. So I've done like four or five of those events, go take an hour, talk to the kids. A lot of these kids, man, like I met a 15-year-old, right? And this guy, his dad owns a car dealership. So what he started was a car wash detailing. So he does his dad's car dealership. And then he started meeting his dad's friends who have high-end vehicles and then started a mobile detailing business. This guy knew so much about credit, about savings, about just like business as a whole. And I'm like, dude, you're 15?
Yeah.
He already had employees. I'm like, you're going to crush.
You're going to crush it. Yeah.
Yeah. So he knew his audience. He knew, you know, how to scale the business already and things like that. And it was impressive seeing that. And then you see, you know, kids that don't necessarily even know what a savings account is or a checking account, the differences. And that's really where it was cool talking to them and then getting that feedback from them saying like nobody's ever really had these conversations with me. Like, can I get your email or something like that? I'm like, yeah, you know, use me as a resource.
Cool. So, yeah, then maybe they'll tell their parents, you know, about you and to do a refi or whatever, right? Like, or purchase a house.
I did have a couple parents that reached out, but also the teachers. Yep. So there was like 30 kids, right? But then three or four teachers came and popped in and they were listening to what I was saying. And then afterwards they were like, hey, can I get your card? I'm thinking about buying.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on the market right now? I'd love to, you know, set up a time, set up a meeting. And, you know, it wasn't something that I was expecting or going in and anticipating like, hey, this is a you know, somewhere where I can fish. But I just genuinely wanted to like educate these kids on like monies and like some basics like interest rates, credit cards, student loans, savings.
Yeah, that's good.
So it was cool. Yeah.
Awesome, man. What's your biggest challenge right now?
Competition. I say it with a grain of salt. Like competition is going to be rampant this year. Like last week, me and a client, well-qualified client, put over ask offers by 50 and 70K respectfully on each of these properties and didn't get it. And it was the same deal. Called the listing agent, couldn't get a hold of him, was hammering him. And then he finally says like, oh, somebody beat you out. And I'm like, who? I was like, wait, hold on. Who has a better qualified client than I do? My client was coming in with 500K cash and they were only financing like 200K, something like that. Strong credit, all the financials were done. I was like, who comes in with a stronger offer than that? We can close in 21 days. We're solid, we're golden. It's like, you didn't get it. And I was like, whoa, this was 70K over ask. The other one was 50K over ask. Client comes in with 25% down and we're going non-QM. So I was explaining the nuances of it and things like that. And the listing agent said, yeah, you guys didn't get it. And I'm like, who's buying these properties, right? Like, who's beating us out?
And they're all cash, probably.
One was all cash.
Yeah.
And then the other one was, I want to say, like, they ended up telling me it was, like, VA or something like that. And I'm like, okay. You know, I have family in the military. Like, I'll, like.
Maybe they were in military and they just, you know.
Yep.
They wanted to.
And I'm all for it. Forward. I'm all for that, man.
Yeah, for sure. That's good. I mean, yeah, I get it. I get it, man. The competition's fierce in real estate right now. I mean, ever since, what was it, probably like 2018 or something, that started getting like that. And there's a lot of cash buyers. There's a lot of foreign buyers.
Yep.
There's a lot of just, there's not a lot of houses.
Nope.
There's not a lot of listings. People. And now even more so, people don't want to give up that low rate. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to let go of the house. So it's even like, look, not even that they before they might sell, right? But now they're like, I got a golden ticket.
Yep.
I am not selling this house. I got it the cheapest rate. I can rent it out.
Yep.
Now and like cash flow like crazy. So why would you sell?
Yeah.
You know, maybe they need that. Maybe, you know, they're thinking like, I need the equity. Mm-hmm. I can get a second or HELOC, whatever, right? Yep. A lot of cash to buy that next house. So
I like that standalone second, by the way.
Tell me
that is killer.
Yeah.
That's awesome. When Shane showed me that, I was like, oh man, I got some clients. Like let's talk to them, you know?
It is like a secret weapon if you know how to use it right.
Yep.
I mean, it could open up doors to real estate agents, CPAs, business attorney, you know, anyone. Like get cash out of your house and don't have to give up that first.
Real estate investors.
Totally.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, if you don't know about it, you better find out about it because it's a freaking secret weapon.
I think that's probably the most important part of our job as loan officers and as realtors, right? You want to educate yourself on what's out there and what's going on and how the market's looking, but more so as loan officers, right? So if I would personally feel bad if a client came to me and there was a product out there that didn't exist, that existed, right?
Yep.
That I couldn't find or I didn't find, I would feel like I did that client a disservice because I didn't educate myself. Yep. And it's like because of my, I guess, lack of, I don't know if the word is like laziness or lack of something, I couldn't get my client across the finish line. That's like personal for me.
You know? It goes back to what we were saying earlier about you just really need to keep bettering yourself. You need to better yourself and educate yourself on new products and always be looking for that. And I think that's what I like about mortgage brokers is because there's so many options for mortgage brokers as far as lenders, they're always looking at different, you know, lender products and they just have a knack for finding out more stuff. You work at a bank as a loan officer, no disrespect, but you just have your product, that's it. And you might be great at your product, but you're not finding out about all the new stuff. You know, you might hear about something here and there, but that's another reason why I think bankers make great referral partners.
Yep.
That's how I built my business when I was early on in the loan, as a loan originator. I think I had like maybe 4 or 5 different bankers that would just refer biz all the time. And what's the best, I mean, it's the best feeling when, you know, someone gets turned down and then you help save the day. That's really what kept me in the business, I think.
I think it's one of those things where what's the saying go? Like one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yep.
But I tell that to even anybody that's like a brand new potential banking partner, right? I let them know, like, what's the stuff that you guys don't want to do?
Yeah.
Like, oh, FHA is hard. VA is hard. Give me that all day.
Yeah.
I want that. Like, you guys can't do. Yeah. You guys can't do like self-employed because you have crazy overlays. Dude, give me those.
Yep.
Give me those all day long. You know? And that's, I don't know. I think more loan officers should be doing that, but
yeah, do it, guys. Come on. This is the time to, you know, how your pipeline's not 20 loans anymore. So now you have more time in your hands to learn, right?
Yeah. But are you, you know, are you learning or are you watching like, all right, I, you know, I made a couple bets on whether Kelsey's going to make 7 catches, like, you know?
Yep. Yep. I guess it goes back to how hungry are you? How much do you want to be better, to be great, you know?
People get lost in their own sauce too.
Yeah.
You know, like and I've you hear it over and over again. It's like, I want to be in the room where I'm the smallest guy, because I want to learn as much as I possibly can. Even if I'm surrounded by loan officers, I want to be the smallest loan officer there. I'm not in the right room if I'm the biggest guy.
You're the top dog.
Yeah, I'm not in the right room.
Yeah.
So
I think if people are listening to this podcast, they're trying to be better. They're trying to learn.
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah, so good. Congrats on listening in. Please keep doing that. let's talk about failure, because I always love failure stories. And in my career, you know, there's been ups and downs. There's been, you know, failures of a business. My first mortgage company I started, we had to close our doors in 08, you know, or end of 07. But that turned into a whole other really cool business for me. So, like, do you have any favorite failure stories?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get an offer accepted on the way over here. So, like, failure for us happens every day. And if you're listening in and you're thinking about getting your real estate license and you're not comfortable with failure, just don't even try.
Yeah.
You literally you have it every day, you face it every day, and it's just something that you have to get very, very comfortable with. But it's all about perception, right? Yeah. So somebody might view something as a failure. And my mom is a big proponent of this stuff. And she always kind of tells me, you know, and I call her for advice all the time. My mom's, she's playing chess. She's 7 steps ahead since I was a little kid. So she was like, did you win or did you learn? That's it. Did you win or did you learn?
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. I'm like, well, on this one I learned. Okay, great. Now you're better off, right?
Right.
Probably one of the coolest failure stories that I have is, and this is me just taking ownership and taking responsibility of it. I had a client come in. I was a referral client from a banking partner. And so when I view it, anytime it's a referral, it's me representing them and representing myself as well.
Yep.
So when I talked to the client, the realtor did a great job, got them in a contract. It was a very nuanced and complicated file. There was, like, you know, gaps in work history, a lot of credit, a lot of debt and things like that. So I was like, okay, how do I can't go conventional. Can I go FHA? If I go FHA, you're always looking for deal killers, right? What are the deal killers potentially?
Yeah. Yep.
And so come to find out that there was a guideline within FHA that is, you can't move within a certain mile radius. Right, you can't buy a property, another property within a certain mile radius. I think it's 50 or 100 miles or something like that.
Yeah, because it's considered not on, it'd be like a second home or whatever, right?
They question your occupancy at that point, right? So then, because I had missed that, we couldn't do the deal. I went from conventional, couldn't do it conventional because debt to income was way too high, and they just, underwriters had chopped down my income. So that was me not fully understanding how income was going to be calculated and things like that. And then also not understanding that guideline, or maybe missing that guideline.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, you know, make a tough conversation, call the realtor. Hey, we're not going to be able to do this. There's no pivot. They're losing the house, basically.
Man.
And luckily my client hadn't released loan contingency or anything like that. So, you know, client kept their EMD, stayed in touch with the client. And let them know, hey, this sucks. This was on me. Took ownership of it. And they said, yeah, you know, it's okay. And we know that it was a tough file and whatever, right? Stayed in touch with her, you know, how are the kids? How's work going? And maybe about a year later, she comes back to me and says, hey, I'm thinking about buying a house. Great. We're not going FHA, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, so same thing, complicated file, but same realtor. Realtor did his job. I got in, things were a little bit different, and we were able to make it happen. So from what I perceived as a failure at the time, by letting down my client because of my own lack of education, it ended up being a win, because not only did we get her across the finish line this time, but she also referred to me like her brother. She referred to me other clients. And then also the realtor was like, hey man, you did a great job. Like, let's work together on some other deals. And
nice.
Yeah, it was really cool.
It's really the way you handled it, you know, I think that probably made them trust you more.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no one's perfect, right? And as soon as you own it and you show that maturity, and that probably deepened your relationship a little bit to where they remembered you and that you were an honest person. And
yep.
and wanted to work with you again, which is then it turned into a big win.
Right? Oh yeah.
You learned and you won eventually.
And it's awesome. Like, I've reached out to them recently and asked them, you know, like, how are the kids and how's everything going? And just kind of touch base on little notes that I have with her. And she was like, man, great memory. Like, that's awesome. Like, everything's working out. And, you know, we might have to refinance, you know, because we locked in at a higher rate. And I didn't even bring that up.
Yeah.
She was just like, hey, how are rates coming? Like, it was a very fluid and very easy kind of conversation. And that's really the conversations you want to have.
That's cool.
You know?
Any shout outs to anyone that's helped you along the way?
Shout out to my fiance, first of all.
Putting up with all your BS.
No, yep. Putting up with me answering calls at dinner because a listing agent is calling and I want to, you know, make sure that that my client is getting the best foot forward. And yeah, she's really just an amazing support system and tolerating all my nonsense and things like cool. that. So, yeah. Shout out to my team, First Choice Home Team. Shout out to you guys at Fun Loans. Helping us crush the non-QM side. We're excited.
Yeah, this year's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
We're pumped up. I mean, probably some new products going to come out. Won't say what it is, but definitely.
Keep it in the dark for the next episode, right?
Yeah. People are going to love this year as things get better. You know, when I think it was like 2018, I was very optimistic that like product was going to expand a ton, right? It felt kind of like early on in my career, like in the year, I want to say like 97, 98, there was a lot of new product coming out and it would come out through fax. So you'd get a fax and you'd look at it and be like, oh man, now you go to 80 on jumbo. Like it was 75 before, now it's 80, right? And then the next thing would be like, now we have seconds for, you know, this. And then there was stated income and it just all slowly started rolling out and then it just expanded. And like, I think it was like 2018 when there was a little bit of that starting to happen. And then COVID hit and it was like, it all turned off and then it kind of reset. And then I can see it starting to come back where there's a little, you know, people want to get a little, they realize that, you know, LTVs are solid, like values are solid, like they're not going to crash. And so there's some people that are sort of stepping out a little bit more and expanding things. So I think we're going to see some good expansions this year and into the following year. You know, nothing crazy like stated income, but maybe
stated income is always the one that's like.
Yeah, I mean, there's some products that we should have that we don't. So we'll see what we can do to bring that to market.
I had an old mortgage banker that told me that. Basically, when he was in, right, in like the heyday,
yep.
Stated income, he's like, if you breathe, you're getting a deal.
Yep.
And so he would go to businesses where there's just like a lot of like grocery stores, stuff like that, right?
Yep.
And even like unconventional places and just anywhere where he can find anybody. And it was really just like B2B, right? Outbound, walking the beat. And he was like, it was weird because there was a point in time where I knew that the bubble was going to burst, but you're charging 4 points to, you know, I don't know, like a pool guy or something like that, right? For his fourth investment property, that's 500K. And it's like, now the guy's got a $2 million portfolio, like, but where's the income, right? To support it, interesting stuff, you know?
Yeah. It's so different now.
Oh yeah.
The equity position that people are in is so different.
Oh yeah.
I mean, granted, you know, a lot of people are still buying homes with minimal down payments, like in like FHA, VA, you know, Fannie, Freddie, but all non-QM, I mean, they're minimum. I mean, we do some 10% down stuff, but I'd say the majority is 20% down, 30% down, 25. Yep. And you see it as a realtor, the majority is these big down payments, right? When they're buying houses. You know, just the equity position in America is just massive. And I see that keep going up. But just due to the dollars, you know, dilution, really what it is. And it's not our dollar, it's just money in general in the world, right? All the currencies. So as that happens, you know, your everything from toilet paper to gas to assets all go up. And it's really not them going up. It's the dilution of money,
yep. You know? I mean, you've seen you've seen some waves, obviously. You said that you went through 2008 cycles, yeah. and all that other stuff, been through multiple cycles. Like, and you see it. There's different lending landscape, right? We're not doing anything crazy, no stated income. You have to have some skin in the game, things like that.
Tight lending practices, yeah.
Way tighter lending practices. What probably one of the craziest statistics, and this is where I feel like myself and other loan officers are not doing right by their clients, is equity is at an all-time high. So is credit card debt.
Yeah. I mean, definitely in the last 6 months, credit card debt has just skyrocketed.
Like, we just surpassed, like, what, $1 trillion or $2 trillion
or yeah.
something crazy.
A lot
like
of zeros.
That.
A lot of people with Visas and MasterCards and Amexes. And I think it's partly because, you know, the money was flowing. Yep. And then the money's starting to tighten up. And then people don't want to give up that lifestyle, right? So there's still going to go skiing this year. We're going to put it on the Amex, whatever, right? We're going to put it on the Visa. We're doing a lot of debt consolidations, a lot of seconds that are paying off cards and paying off stuff. And so it's a huge opportunity to go after that business yep. and then to gain, you know, new prospects, new clients for your pipeline. And then you can refi them later when the rates drop. So there really is a lot of opportunity out there. And I think this year is going to be just probably a banner year for a lot of people that are still in the business.
If you want to hear something crazy, I had a client send me over statements on the way over here. Like last week, right? She's got a ton of properties, ton of equity and things like that. And she was like, hey, like, is 12 a high interest rate? And I'm like, on your mortgage? Like, yeah. Yeah, that's really high.
That's really high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are they
Who's
at
she
now?
Getting that from?
Oh, no. She hasn't touched these things since like 2005.
She had a 12% on her 2005 loan?
Yeah. And she never like refinanced, never did anything. And this is like on multiple properties. She's got like,
maybe they're adjustable. That's probably what it is.
Could be. I haven't even looked at the statements. I just took her word for it because she sees them every month. Right. I'm like, man, like we can refinance this, save you a lot of money. And
she probably had a 327 back in like 2005.
327.
Remember, do you know what that was?
Mm-mm.
228.
Mm-mm.
3 year fixed, 27 years adjustable.
Whoa. Okay.
That's what they were. We did a lot of 228s. It was just like, you're fixed for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and then it just goes to straight adjustable 6 month. Like a back there, then it was the LIBOR, so mm-hmm. you'd be on the London Interbank Offered Rate, and that now is the SOFR. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, she probably got if she got a loan in 2005, it was probably one of those, you know, maybe a 5 year fixed.
Yeah.
Like she got it from World Savings or something like that. And then it went into adjustable.
Yeah.
So maybe the last, you know, 10 years rates were really low. She was like, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm set.
And set, but they never fixed it. She should have refinanced and fixed it into like a 15 year fix or something like that.
I didn't
like
know her
1%.
Then. I didn't know her then. So.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You got that deal.
I hope so. I mean, we'll review it. And she, first thing she asked me, she's, hey, well, I don't show a lot of income. I'm a business owner. And I'm like, great. I don't want that.
And we'll see your tax returns.
Nope. Yep. Don't show me the tax returns. I don't need to see it. I'm good. I'm golden. And don't pay the government more money than you absolutely should. Right. So
exactly. That's right. Cool. Where does someone find you? They want to use you as a real estate. They want to refer
yeah.
your business or pick your brain.
I mean, you can hit my direct line, but also they can find me on Instagram. I just started doing the social media thing. So it's at Call Juan Munoz. That's it. So just call first and last name. Thinking about trademarking it. I don't know.
That'd be cool.
Sounds pretty cool. Getting a website going or something like that. But yeah.
Expand. Get ready for the big wave of loans that's going to come.
Loans, real estate deals, just a lot of movement. A lot of movement in the market. A lot of competition. San Diego County, man. It's, you know as well as I do, it's wild.
It's wild.
So fun stuff.
Exciting year ahead, guys. Thanks for watching this podcast. Thanks for coming on the show. And please share, like, subscribe, do all those things. If you got all the way to the end today, also check out my tequila business, WeDrinkTequila.com. Thanks for watching, guys. See you on the next one.
The $1 Million Mortgage Experience Podcast.